Welcome. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast about people, where we discuss any and everything under the sun having to do with being a human. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe, rate, and share your favorite episodes with your friends and family. If there's a topic you want to hear more about, feel free to reach out to us on social media or at the email linked in the description. Again, thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy this episode. Much love. What's up, y'all? Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the podcast about people. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with someone real, real cool. Her name is Allison Nail Malone. The words that come to mind when I think of her are grounded, powerful, wise, and compassionate. Allison is a grief educator, a leadership coach, and a public speaker. What's up, Allison? Thank you so much for coming through today. Hey, yeah, how you doing? So Allison, for those tuned in, Allison and I were on a co-working session, I think it was like a couple weeks ago now. Was it last week? I don't remember what time it is. And
something like that I was hosting.
I regularly host them for a cohort of a program we're both in through 2020. And we started talking about what she's up to. And I really just had to invite her on to the show to share her wisdom and gifts with y'all. For those who are tuned in, who, you know, are new to you, or maybe even those that are like tuned in that know you, I'd love to give you some space to share a little bit about who you are, where you've been, and also where you're going, if you're open to that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So who I am and where I've been, I think one of the things that I've been telling this story of, I think, is a good indicator of who I am and where I've been because of that. So when I was 9 years old, that's the first hustle, the age that I had my first hustle. And what I did was I went to people's houses that were in my neighborhood, and I picked up trash and I picked up weeds out of their yard. I went and knocked on their door. They answered the door and they said, hello. I said, hey, I just picked up trash and weeds. Here's everything that I just did, and you owe me $5. Who's going to tell me no?
So, yeah.
At that time. That was many years ago, right? Many years ago. Probably wouldn't happen as much today. But then I had to have a mindset of how do I help support my family and what are creative ways within my power. Now, of course, as a nine-year-old, that's not what I'm thinking in those words. But, you know, what's within my power to help my family and to have food on the table, have clothes on our backs. And so I think that's kind of the beginning of my story when I talk about who I am as a human. Is often my role has been very matriarchal, as a caretaker, caregiver, finding creative ways to provide space for other people, whatever that looks like. And you know, most of my background has been a series of different opportunities and relationships that took me all across the country. In fact, in the early 2000s, my best friend, who was French, he gave me a very different view of the world. And he and I converted a Westfalia van. So this was we did this way before it was super cool to do it. But we converted a Westfalia van and worked virtually before working virtually was even a thing. And so cool. We traveled all across the West and had some really incredible adventures. And so I've always kind of taken that adventurous spirit with me. So having been all across the country, lived and semi-lived in places all across the country, just to experience people is also another way that I view myself, as someone that really enjoys connection with people and finding intentional spaces to make that happen. And so what that says for me today is about 6 years ago, after just being done with working in corporate as a human resources practitioner, I decided it was time to break up with corporate and launch into my business, which at the time was under a different name, but it was leadership and life coaching at that time. Mm-hmm. And it really morphed into the opportunity to serve in a much more, I would say, more impactful way. I believe that with each person that I connect, they impact five other people in their space, which, you know, I think is a great way to take over the world and create joy through that kind of ripple effect. And so my practice kind of evolved into supporting nonprofits, supporting small businesses that were female owned or female identified or female bodied or however they identify, to show up in a space where having HR and coaching didn't have to be a luxury anymore. So making it accessible. Yeah. And and so from there, we'll kind of dive into a little bit how it's transformed. So that's where it is today. And I guess the other thing is that just from a human perspective, I have a deep spiritual practice, meditation. I spend a lot of time alone, so I'm naturally an introvert, but I'm a learned extrovert because of the work that I've done over the years. And I just really deeply value and honor and so incredibly grateful for the people that I'm connected to in my life.
It's really, really beautiful. A few things stuck out as you were sharing that. The transition from HR to coaching, I'm mm-hmm. finding, you know, I share this pretty openly. It's like, because of the business that I've had, I sit in the back of the rooms, quote unquote, literally and figuratively, right? And I have really noticed a lot of patterns. And I noticed this pattern of folks, you know, yeah, for sure, leaving corporate and coming over and doing their own business and feeling drawn to do something that empowers and cultivates new pathways for people, supporting people and making new pathways for themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you shared that you worked in HR, I was like, oh, wow. I was like, that, like, I literally got it. Like, the full, like, you really embody that, like, because it's one of my best friends that I've known her since I was five. She's an HR practitioner, and she has that same sort of sense of like the compassion, the groundedness, the wisdom, and like kind of like this really like potent but soft like power, you know, mm-hmm. that I think is like really one of the skills that y'all have to develop to be able to work in the HR space, right? Because y'all are navigating a lot. So to be able to know that you're bringing that over to the coaching space is really powerful, especially with how you named too that when you first started, you, and I know you still are, you're working on ways in which you can have offerings that are accessible and equitable. Mm-hmm. That's actually something that I was marinating on today as far as like this coaching industry, you know, like, because and kind of the space we met in, right, like a lot of folks are really working on becoming more equitable mm-hmm. in their businesses and having there be more access. And I kind of was sitting with this vision today of like, what if there was really profound access to the coaching space, you know, like what if folks over here in the hood where I'm currently residing, like knew what a coach was, you know, mm-hmm. like what if they were able to go to these events and go to these programs, you know, like even myself, like I think I've been afforded the opportunity to be in all these rooms and like rub elbows with folks because I've been supporting the space, you know, like if I wasn't supporting the space with my business in the way I do, if I like do a bird's eye view and like if I were to share really intimately about my life, like I don't know if I would have been able to elevate myself that sort of way, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really powerful to know that you are one of the folks out there in the world cultivating these sorts of things for folks and also knowing your background. And I know that personally speaking, like I have a soft spot for folks that transition from corporate to the coaching space and carry kind of the mission that you have, you know? Because I know that that's not a big thing. I mean, that is a big thing. That's not a little thing. My brain wanted to say both at the same time. it's not a little thing. It's a really big thing to like give yourself the permission to make that choice, you know? Because mm-hmm. that's living your truth, you know? Like the summit I'm going to be hosting that I I'm definitely reaching out to you about. But the theme of that is like, that's living your truth, you know, like that's hella living your truth. And, you know, I know too, where you've recently gone with what we were talking about on the co-working session the other day, is you also recently finished, I believe, is it referred to as a death doula certificate, grief doula? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I have, so there's a couple of different things. So the first part of my journey was to get a certification, which also I got, I just went ahead and got the accreditation as well, which means I had to do certain hours and testing and all of that to get, basically it's a death doula, or some people call it an end of life or end of transition or transition doula. You know, we have doulas for birth, and that's a transition from one life to another life, and so is death. It's a transition from one life to, and we as a society, in most cases, not all cultures and not all cases, but in most cases, particularly in the United States, we don't do death well.
Yeah.
And we don't acknowledge the process of death before, during, and after very well either. Now, there's lots of cultures that do a great job of it, but from an American, you know, white supremacist way, we don't talk about death. We're scared of death. We're, you know, we have to be hard and strong for death, you know? And, so from there, I also found a real love for end of life planning. So I got a certification for that. And that really came out of my own experience as well, of not knowing what the heck to do with all the things that had to come with why I even did all of this. And so also, finishing up the process as a grief educator. So there'll be a certification alongside that.
Yeah. Those three things are so important, like in general. And also I think too, as we continue to go forward all together in life, you know, on this big old planet with all the things that have been happening, you know, being able to face the difficult things that have been coming our ways and are going to continue to come our ways, you know? Mm-hmm. So being able to equip yourself for yourself personally, like, because I know you're going to be able to apply these things to your life, your loved ones, your friends, your family, and then also to be able to know that you're bringing those also to all of the coaches you work with, whether that they are directly related to folks that are going to be transitioning, or whether they are in conversations you're having with leadership coaches, you know, because I think the thing we were kind of talking about the other day is like that grief is like everywhere, you know, like there's little deaths all the time. Like we look at, yeah, like you were pointing to, like the United States, Western culture looks at death a certain way. And, you know, other cultures, I was actually talking to a buddy of mine the other day, and she was sharing with me like the West African understanding of death and grief is like from childhood they're taught how to navigate those things, you know, and that is because that's a death and grief, I think it was more so focused on grief is what she was sharing, is like an initiation, right? But like I said, death and grief, they're everywhere, you know, like you end a relationship with a friend, a coworker, a business partner, like that's a little experience of, not little, it could be big, but that's an experience of a death. That's an experience of a grief, you know?
And I've also found with grief too, is it's even like a shift in mindset can cause grief.
Ooh, you know, yeah.
I mean, a great example is how over the last couple of years, not that those mindsets never existed, they just got revealed, right? And so parts of us were like, oh, I didn't know you thought that way, or I didn't know I thought that way. And now I have to choose, do I stay there, do I go, or do I move forward? And moving forward with a different mindset, a way of being, also creates grief. It's a good thing that a person would shift, you know, potentially their view, but there's grief that comes with that too. And there's a lot of unique ways that grief shows up in our lives, even in the good things. We move houses, that can create grief.
Big. Yeah. It's so interesting how that kind of points me to like the creature aspect of humans, you know, like we show up, we talk in language in this sort of way that we do, which I think is one of the main things that differentiates us from like creatures in the forest, you know? And also we, I don't know. That's like, I think the biggest thing, but there are those shifts from our routines, you know, like a lion doesn't like jump out the forest and like go to the beach and have to, you know, doesn't buy a house somewhere else, you know, like they have their very instinctual things. So when we do shift from those things that have sort of formed around our instinct, it can be difficult to shift, mm-hmm. you know, like very, very, very much so. Especially when and if we don't keep these things in mind, like that we're going through that grief, that we're going through that cycle, you know? And I think that, you know, I always hear people say that people deal with grief differently. So mm-hmm. when it's like a loved one that has passed, like there's like big grief, you know? Mm-hmm. And what I recently learned from someone as I was going through a really big grief process, I was leaving a community and I was just noticing all the people that were not in alignment, that I wasn't going to be bringing forward, you know? And there was one in particular who I was really, really close to, and I felt this like grief, but I didn't know how to deal with it, right? So I like went to this person who was like worked with healing modalities, and she shared with me that new grief can trigger old grief as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was talking about this with a buddy on another session recently too, is like, it's like you step into the ocean of grief and everything's still there, you yeah. know? Kind of like, have you seen Harry Potter? Are you a Harry Potter fan? Okay, yes, so you know when like Dumbledore, they have that thing where they can like take the wands and like take the memories mm-hmm. out and they put it in that big old vat of like cloudiness. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I picture when I say like an ocean of grief, you know?
Yeah.
Is that it's always there. So you dip your foot into it and you feel all of the things, even if your brain isn't cognitively recognizing what the memory or the thought is. It's like, your heart is opened, like that emotional intelligence within your heart, and you know that stuff, it doesn't, I think we kind of touched on this too the other day, it was like grief doesn't go away, it just gets like easier to navigate and manage, you know?
Yeah,
it's like it's the buddy I was talking to the other day, her name, you might know her name's Maisha, she was saying that like grief is like its own entity, you know? Yes. And it's like, it's really interesting because I was sharing with her that like, I see this pattern that this is really coming a lot more to the forefront, you know? Like if I look at, I noticed, by the way, while I was editing a lot of sessions recently that I talk a lot about social media. So I just want to say people who listen, like it's just because it's there. Okay. But the point I was going to make right now was about TikTok or like Instagram or something. There's this girl on there who I've seen and she's a death doula. And like, you know, she has a pretty substantial following and like, seeing her do that and, you know, knowing that you're doing what you're doing, having the conversation I had the other day, like I'm seeing just in those specific spots, but also in other places, that grief is really coming to the forefront of our collective consciousness right now in the ways that we're speaking of, but also in like, if I have this sense that it's going to be like even a deeper way, you know, probably by this time next year, you know, mm-hmm. and also I recognize too, where, you know, we just entered into August, it's the season shifting, so it's like also kind of in the air of like we're about mm-hmm. to probably collectively grieve the end of summer. I know mm-hmm. I for sure am. At least over here on this side of the hemisphere, right? The folks on the other side are about to have a whole ass celebration.
Yep.
but you know, I just feel like there's so much here to talk about and to go dive deeper about, and I'm curious if there's anything within your recent studies around grief, you know, mm-hmm. even your experience with grief long term in life or even with yeah. death and the end of care planning, like if there's anything specific that sticks out as like a pattern or as like maybe even something that you want like people in a bigger way to know, you yeah. know?
Yeah. The first thing, and this came first from my own personal experience. So where this really inspired me, I had had grief before this life event, but in 2020, my father passed away and I was his main caretaker. And so I had the anticipatory grief. So knowing something was getting ready to happen, and then the after grief, and then the after grief. And so one of the things I've discovered through my own experience, but also seeing like this pattern over the last 2.5 years from COVID and you know, murders that we saw, you know, in our face on TV, on social media, there is this question that kept getting asked, like, we are not going to know the emotional, mental, spiritual, physical impacts of what has happened over the last 2.5 years till, you know, some researchers were saying within the next year. It would take at least 1 year for people to start identifying the true impacts of what was happening and how that was going to amplify, magnify, or reveal certain aspects of who we are as a human race. Yeah. And so one of the things that I've learned through that is grief is kind of like a bratty kid sometimes. All a kid wants is to be heard and acknowledged. And yeah. And that's what grief wants. Grief is a, saying that grief is its own entity is 100% correct. It is its own being, and if, and sometimes it acts like a brat because, and I think this is why, to your point, people are talking about it more. People are a lot more open to having some kind of conversation is because grief is saying, no, like, you can't ignore me anymore. You're not going to ignore me anymore. And I'm going to scream. I'm going to make it painful. I'm going to make sure you pay attention to me. And that I feel like that's what's happening. Why more people are talking about, why more people are curious about it. It's still, you know, has a long way to go, but it's a topic that, one, I think our younger tenured generations are no longer hiding things. And this is just one of those difficult topics that are coming to light. I think so many people, so many humans, particularly over the last 2.5 years, but it's been longer than that, the grief has become so insurmountable that it can't be ignored anymore. Even if we want to ignore it, it will find its way through like water through mountain. It's going to find the path, even if it's a difficult path, even if it's the least resistant path. Water is going to find a way. And I think grief is like that too. I think the second piece about grief, and this actually came from a book called Grief is Love. And the way that the author writes the book is it really puts into like tangible in our brain picture is that grief is really an expression of love. Even like with the relationship I have with my dad was really tough, and he was a cantankerous, challenging person, and we had a really tumultuous relationship, and I can still grieve him because that was an expression of love.
Yeah, I think the quote too, what I've heard is like grief is like the final act of love. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. in the way that you're sharing, as well as, you know, even in relationship, when relationships end, but even during them too, you know, there's this one story in the book, Women Who Run with Wolves. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that book? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one archetype that she shares in there. It's my favorite one ever. It's the skeleton woman. Whenever my friends come to me for guidance in relationships, I always bring her up because I really like to live through the perspective of the skeleton woman, which is like everything that happens is meant to keep a balance, right? There's this one passage where she says something to the effect of everything is meant to keep a balance. The skeleton woman sits in the room kind of weighing out everything that's happening, right? And in the context that she's sharing it between two lovers, and she's sharing that oftentimes lovers are afraid to go deeper because they have to go through the grief of mourning what is right then and there, you know? So when my friends come to me that have things going on in their relationships, I point them to that archetype. I'm like, well, what's going on that you're grieving? Because it's not the end of the relationship. Like, people tend to like want to continue on even if there's difficulty, right? Like, but it's those moments of making the cognitive choice of, oh, well, while we are stepping out of like the honeymoon phase, oh, while we are not the people that we were presenting at first, or, you know, we're not, you know, all those sorts of things that come up like in the newness of like connections, and people are often afraid of stepping through that, you know? So it really is like, it is its own entity, and it weaves it grief weaves itself through like the fibers of our lives, you know. Mm-hmm. And as you were sharing what you were sharing about, you know, grief, and it's going to find its way like water through the mountain, the visual that I had was like, I don't know, like someone trying to like get something off of them, but it's not leaving, you know. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that they could do was like sit in the middle of the room and feel it, whether it's like a guttural cry or like a wail, you know, like giving themselves that space to actually let it out. Cause, you know, like a lot of the healing modalities are now sharing, and I think I've learned about it somatically from, what's the name of the book? The Body Keeps the Score. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was doing a lot of somatic stuff before I actually like learned the studies behind it, you know, but Body Keeps the Score is like, yeah, it's like a somatic thing. So to be able to somatically process through that grief, like that's like, I feel like that's for sure. The education is what's coming up first, but I feel like, you know, the next step is going to be maybe like, I know Maisha, she holds grief circles as a part of like her lounge, and I know different cultures do as well. Like they actually mm-hmm. like sit with their grief, but to be able to see that maybe come through in a bigger way in like the community spaces, you know. And I'm not even saying just like events, like even outside of events, in like the community, like grassroots kind of way, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, because I know, like, you know, there's a lot of different types of circles that people join in, medicine circles, community activism circles, things like this. But I see maybe there's space definitely for us to have like grief circles in that sort of way, you know, as a way to like deepen our collective grounding into mm-hmm. our fullness, you know, because mm-hmm. like yeah. it's a lot.
Yeah. And you know, educator after therapist after educator after professor, like all this like quote unquote research and stuff that I've been doing over the last couple of years, there hasn't been one that has said grief can be healed by yourself.
Yep.
Every single, and then when you also think about the different cultures who do honor grief, who do honor death, it's in community, and that's on purpose. And I think that's another really beautiful benefit of grief, is that it has the capacity to create community. I know after my father passed away, I participated in a grief circle and two grief circles. And it was a life-changing event for me, because I was thrown into a club or a language that I had no context really around. And here was this other group of people who were speaking the same language as me. They were speaking from the same, our experiences were very different about grief. And as you've shared, like our process through grief is very individual. And also the way grief begins its healing journey is through community. And when we stay in a place of individualism in it, it just keeps churning. And it just keeps churning until it comes to a point where community is where grief begins its healing journey.
Yeah. Community is where grief begins its healing journey. Begins its healing journey. Like that's so vital, because it's like allowing the gates to open, you know.
Yeah
very, very much so. That's really powerful. Yeah. And like, I don't know, there's just so many things that come to mind. The one thing one of the words that you said is like kind of fluttering in my mind is anticipatory grief. I had never heard that before. But when you said that, I was like, I had a situation pop up. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what I was experiencing. Anticipatory grief. I didn't even think of that. What would you define anticipatory grief as?
Mm-hmm. So it's the thought. I mean, essentially, it's the thought of knowing that something's going to end or transition, and not fully knowing what's going to happen afterwards, but you know you're going to experience loss, and you know you're going to experience pain, or you know you're going to experience something different, but you can't put something tangible to what that looks like because it's unknown. And a great example is during the time when I, my dad was put into hospice. I knew before he went into hospice that that was going to be the path, but I didn't want to think about it because that was tough. I was anticipating. I knew that it was coming. And so our brains don't always know the difference between what happened in the past, what's happening now, and what's happening in the future. Yep. And so my brain is anticipating grief. So really, it's already experiencing grief. It's already processing, presenting grief to my body, even though I may not be calling it that. I may be calling it anger or resentment or extreme fatigue. Or I know for sure I just had very little energy to deal with anybody's BS. I feel like one of my gifts is to be able to hold space and be patient and all of that. And I just had no energy to do it. And people were shocked by that.
Yeah.
And so I even had that as part of the grief process. Like, well, I'm a human being. Of course I'm going to experience this. Like, why can't you just why do I have to play the role you want me to play all the time? And so there was all these different facets to that anticipatory grief. And I feel like we experience it in more places than just the death journey. I think you mentioned that experience, or like when you know a relationship is coming to an end or that it needs to end. Yeah. And you're already thinking about what's going to happen afterwards. And that's the anticipation. I still can't say it. Anticipating the grief.
It's one of those words are hella hard sometimes. Sometimes I don't even try. Like, you're being hella courageous trying. I would have been like, that one word you said, I'm not even going to try. Like, I think there are podcast episodes where I've tried to get words out and I'm just like, I'm not even going to try. I didn't think the first one I did with Jamila that was in our cohort too. Mm-hmm. I could not get a word out. I literally got stuck on it for like probably 2 minutes. Like, if you ever check out that session, I was like, I can't do it. And she was being hella sweet. She was like, you know what? I do this too sometimes. And I'm like, no, like this, I don't know what's happening. Words though. But that's a really beautiful way to put it. And yeah, it's like that kind of felt like, I'm a really visual person, so oftentimes when people speak, I'm picturing different visuals, right? So when you were speaking, what's coming up was like, for those who have been on roller coasters, like going on a roller coaster at like an amusement park or fair or something, like that going up and knowing you're about to drop, you know, and knowing that there's nothing you could do and you just have to yell real loud if you need to yell, or pass out or whatever comes up.
Raise your hands.
Yeah. You know, just like, you know, it's coming. The ride's going to be there because you're already on track for it, you know? So yeah, that's anticipatory grief. That's really powerful. Wow. I'm sitting with like, well, if I would have known that that's what that was, you know, during different situations, like, I guess I'll be a little bit vulnerable around what came to mind is like my grandma, when she passed away in 2012, we knew she was about to pass away, you know, and I still had to go to school. I had moved to Arizona. I was about to move to Arizona. I found out, you know, and I was like, nope, not going to do it. Everyone in the family was like, no, you have to go do this. You can't stop your life. And I'm like, nah, like, y'all don't get it. Like, that's my grams. Like, she raised me. That's my mom, you know? Mm-hmm. But I still called her every day, you know? And she, at that point, some days she knew who I was, some days she didn't. But I still knew that she knew I loved her, which was what was the thing, you know? So that anticipatory grief, I didn't even know that that was a thing. But that's definitely, like, as you're sharing, that's definitely what I was experiencing, you know? It was like that. I was really sad, but I was like, well, she's still here. You know, mm-hmm. I could still talk to her. Mm-hmm. But it was that not knowing when that roller coaster was going to drop, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And then when it dropped, it was like a fucking free fall, you mm-hmm. know? Like, but that kind of, it creates, for those who might experience that, for me at least, like it created a lot of pressure, you know? A lot of pressure that I didn't know how to sift through and I didn't know how to name until like right now that was anticipatory grief. You know, and I'm wondering too if there's any tips maybe that you'd offer folks that are dealing with that anticipatory grief, Because that's, you know, I see that collectively we're starting to talk more about grief at the forefront. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, I didn't even know that anticipatory grief was like a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Are there any tips, any tools, any kind of wisdom that comes up for you to offer to folks to maybe sit with that, how to navigate that, like how to, mm-hmm. how to make it how to come to the awareness of it as they're dealing with it, you know?
I'm just writing this down so I can think through that. So I think one of the first indicators is there is a lot of not just emotions, but ways of thinking and waves of thinking that are happening. I think for a lot of people, it's like you talk about the roller coaster, like you're doing the loop-de-loos. Like it's like this constant, a client of mine said today, it's almost like this constant liquid of goo around me. And I know that it's not going to last for long. I know it's not forever, but it's like really kind of heavy. And I don't even know like what to call it. And oftentimes that's because we're experiencing a lot of emotions. We're feeling it in our bodies too.
Yeah.
And I mean, the first step is really just kind of that acknowledgement of being okay that it's not okay. It's okay that it's not okay. It's okay that I, one minute I'm happy, and then 10 minutes later I'm feeling angry or resentment or whatever it is, or my heart is racing. I tend to get really, when I get emotional, whatever, that I get like real heated around my neck and my chest. And so that's like my first indicator something's going on, even if I can't name it.
Yeah.
And then it's just that I think that first thing is acknowledgement. Something's going on. I'm feeling a lot of stuff physically, mentally, spiritually, whatever that is. Maybe this is grief. What am I grieving? The sooner you can get into community, I think the better as well. And community could be a sister, a friend, you know, someone that is a trusted person in your life to share this, I'm experiencing grief over a relationship, over a move, whatever that is. So acknowledgement, creating community. And each one of us has a unique way to process our emotions. And oftentimes we don't make time to do that. And I think it's so important that we take space, even if it's 5 minutes and you have to lock yourself in the bathroom. Because I know for some people, it's saying I'm going to take 2 hours off is a real luxury and privilege, and I can't do that, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we just have to take that 5 minutes, lock the door, and acknowledge, connect with someone or some way, and then just sit with how it feels and just like, why am I feeling this way? How am I feeling about it? And is there anything I can do about it right now? And you know what? It's okay if the answer is no, I can't. There's nothing I can do right now. It's okay. And let me just spend time. And you said it beautifully earlier, is to sit in the room and just feel it. I think oftentimes what particularly in our society in general, we don't sit with our emotions on what it is, like just even naming what we're feeling, where it might be coming from. And if we don't know, that's okay. And sitting in the midst of it, because I think in the midst of it is where the answers are at.
Yeah. Sitting in the midst of it is where the answers are found. For sure. For real, for real. Yeah. Like leaning into it, as uncomfortable as it might be, you know? Mm-hmm. I find too that, at least in my experience, that there is sometimes where we can be so in it that we keep thinking it's going to go away, you know? Mm-hmm. Like in my own healing grief journey, I remember I had, as you were sharing, this one moment came to mind of like, I was in a car and I was driving back from an event and I had that big grief pang. And I was just like, oh, this is grief, you know, and I had to pull over and sob it out for a little bit. And then, you know, definitely was like, all right, I need to, you know, make that phone call that I've been putting off to get myself that support in community that I needed, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is that, like, it could kind of weigh on our chest. But then for me, like, it's like my eyes, you know, when you, I don't know, I know folks tuned in probably, and a lot of people probably feel that, where it's like you feel the tears on your eyes and you're like, nope, not yet. gotta do like three more things, and then right? I can get to that. That's been up for me this week for sure too. I know I'm a little tender bug over here all the time. Me and my Scorpio sun, as bad of a rep that we get as Scorpios, we're really like hella emotional, like
super sensitive in a heart way for sure.
Yeah, super sensitive in a heart way, like hella much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that like that letting yourself step into it and knowing that it's not going to be like a, I don't know, at least for some of the folks that I've talked to, sometimes it could feel like a overwhelming thing that they won't be able to get over, you know?
Yeah.
But knowing that it could be 5 minutes, it could be a day, it could mm-hmm. be maybe 3 weeks, you know, but there is going to be a moment where it won't be there, you know? Yeah. One of the things that I like to offer folks when they're navigating to is like this affirmation, not to be confused with mantras. I know a lot of people call them mantras, but mantras like have a very specific cultural meaning mm-hmm. within the cultures that use mantras. So this is an affirmation, y'all. The affirmation that I suggest to folks is like, I feel this way right now, but I might not feel it tomorrow. Mm. You know?
I love that.
And then continuing to say it as an affirmation whenever that feeling comes up, if it feels overwhelming, that grief, that all the different stages of grief is, I feel this way now, I might not feel it tomorrow, you know, and using that as an affirmation until someone has, the person that you're talking to, yourself, whoever, has shifted through to the next stage, you know, or okay. is feeling relief. Levity in that moment, you know?
Yeah.
Because it really is like this, the embodiment of, I don't know, I think folks call it like emotional intelligence, but I have like mm-hmm. gripes about that.
Yeah.
But like it's the fullness of being human, you know? Like,
yeah.
One thing I keep in mind is like birds don't have to go to school to be birds. Like they just fly, you know?
Yep.
They do their instincts. We as humans, we got to do the studies and then peer review them and then publish them in journals, and then they slowly drip down through the collective consciousness, or you know, the indigenous understanding in ways start to, you know, be shared more, you know, like there's this it's almost like needing to study being human as you're being human, you know, mm-hmm. that goes on for us humans, which is such a silly thing to me. But mm-hmm. grief and this topic we're talking about is definitely a big aspect of it. And I know that, you know, the grief aspect and the things that we're talking about and that we've been talking about on this session so far, they're not the, like, you do a lot of things. Like, there's a mm-hmm. lot of cards that you bring to the table. Especially with like your executive leadership coaching, right? Like you hold mm-hmm. space for folks that are up to pretty big things in the world that need some support on navigating and yeah, definitely embodying these layers and weaving them into their lives, but also, you know, maybe, I don't have the full sense of your work, but from what I intuit is, around like the embodiment of their humanity within their mm-hmm. leadership, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your favorite part about that work?
I think the favorite part is when they figure out what their core values are. And then they begin to make decisions and connections and ideas through those core values. And I haven't seen it yet once not happen this way. I've seen it always happen this way. Once they sit in those core values, they name and claim them. They define them in the way that is meaningful for them, things begin to shift. Now, discomfort usually happens in that space. And as they move through the discomfort, like really amazing things happen. And I've seen it happen every single time when they step into, I think most people know like, oh, I value honesty. I value integrity. I value, you know, things that we would say are quote unquote obvious. But then we have things that are deeper to us that, or be, I don't want to say beyond honesty, but like there's other things that are really meaningful, that are special to us, that are unique to us, that we may not have known that that's how we navigate and view and see the world, but we do through those core values. And so like one of mine is connection to self and source. So when I make a decision to work with a client, mostly corporate clients or a nonprofit or a small business, so how do they demonstrate connection to their people, connection to themselves? They don't have to be look exactly like the way I do it. But when I try to work with companies that don't value the people that they work with, in the past, I would say yes and try to get them there. But we never got there because there was such misalignment. When I would work with companies, people that have a true value of the people that work for with them, we get places. And so I think once I kind of have that aha moment that it's not also just about the work I do, but it's in the rest of my life. I had one client a while ago, and I have permission to share his story. He is now at 67, still working in a chicken factory or a chicken farm. Yeah. And the product is eggs. And his company put him through leadership coaching with me. And the first time he came and he sat down in front of me, he was like, I don't need this. This is a bunch of hoo-ha. And I don't know why I'm here. I was like, okay, so cool. Well, let's just start with getting to know each other. And over time, we developed a really great partnership and really great sessions. And about 6 months after coaching, his wife called me. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. Why is somebody's wife calling me? And she said, whatever you've done to my husband, I want to thank you. Whatever kind of coaching you're doing, I want to thank you, because he's become a better husband, a better grandfather, a better community leader in our space. And I really believe it, that the transition really happened when he started coaching. And we started out with his core values and what that looked like to him.
Yeah. That's really powerful. The wholeness and how it has ripple effects, you know? Mm-hmm. And even when the person might be resistant, how our loved ones can definitely still see that, the shifts, you know? Because it's like, I don't know, the context that I was first presented within the coaching space was like, we're onions, right? So it's like the onion layers. So peeling back the onion layers and getting more towards the core of who a person is, like being able to allow them the space, that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that's really sweet how you navigated and you were able to hold space for him to show up exactly who he is and who he was at that time, and to be able to match him completely there fully. Like, that's really, really powerful. And I think that that's a big aspect. I was gonna say, like, I know of like folks who coach, you know, like that's the foundational of coaching, you know. And also, I know not everyone brings it though, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. even if they learned to bring it, like, that's not what they bring. Like, from sitting in all the rooms that I've sat in, being around all the people I've been around, you know, so to know that you were able to offer him that, like, that's really beautiful. Shout out to the spirit of that client. May he continue to reap all that he seeks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm curious too, with public speaking, what kind of public speaking are you up to these days?
Mostly I have been talking to different groups of people about mindfulness and like it's all been centered around core values of some sort. And the most recent ones have been mostly focused on like mindful leadership, mindful presence, simple somatic ways. I don't call it somatic, unless it depends on the group I'm in front of, but like somatic ways to deal with stress. And so just finding simple ways in order to navigate and manage stress in ways that are things that they're already doing or already have opportunities to incorporate. I think oftentimes we, you know, when we're talking about like mindfulness practices, it's this, it has to be this big grandiose thing. It has to be this, I got to put it on my calendar for an hour every day. And if I don't do that, then I'm a horrible human being. And when we think about, you know, mindfulness practices, what are those simple, small, what I call those kind of 1% movements that we can incorporate already in our day to day? People are more likely to do it, and people are more likely to expand upon that on their own time. So those most recently have been the things, speaking publicly on managing stress and mindfulness of that.
Yeah. And those are such needed tools for sure in like general, but even more so in like where we're at collectively, you know, mm-hmm. like, cause I feel like those, like, I don't know, for folks tuned in are probably all over this, like the graph, the spectrum, the table, whatever word y'all want to use around like awareness, healing, right? Like I know I got mm-hmm. I got a lot of folks in a lot of different places, a lot of different backgrounds tuned in. So those tools though, like you could walk into literally any room and offer that, those tools. And people will be able to take something from that, you know? Mm-hmm. It's the word is universal, right?
Yeah.
Because we are, you know, stress could stop us from doing so much if we're not able to actually process through, like, as we're talking about grief, like being able to actually let yourself feel it, acknowledge it, name it, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, this is stress going on. Like, these are the things that I could do to move through that, you know? Because mm-hmm. I think, you know, stress... unexamined stress, unsoothed, that can lead to like depression, you know, and all those other things. Cause it becomes like I don't know, what are those things called? Crockpot? No, that's not a crockpot. Dang, I need to phone a friend. I gotta call my dad.
Is, the pressure cooker?
Yeah, there you go. That one, the pressure cooker. I could picture it in my head, like see words, dude. Like I could picture it in my head because he used to cook so much stuff in that, like potatoes and mm-hmm. whatever. That's other things. Yeah, he was like a, he's still, I think he still is. I don't hang out around him a lot, but he used to do the pressure cooker a lot for cooking. Mm-hmm. And I was always so transfixed by the little thing
that releases
little thing at the top, but that, because that's really what it is, you know, is the things you shared, they are that way to release. Yep.
And with the crock pot, with, I mean, not crock pot, see now I'm saying it.
Pressure cooker, we got the this Allison cooker. We got this.
You have to release it slowly, like you can't, like if you try to just push it and release it all, like all this steam and liquid and all that comes like shooting out, which can burn you. And I think that's a great metaphor, because sometimes the release of stress needs to be slow, intentional, and simple, just like the pressure cooker.
Pressure cooker.
Right. I wanted to say crock pot, but I said pressure cooker.
Crock pots are cool too, but they don't do the same thing.
No.
That they would be the example of like what would be encouraged not to do, you know, because you take mm-hmm. the lid off that, all the steam comes up. If your face is in the way, you get like a nice little hot mist that might hurt, you know. For sure, open the pores up, but that's not a thing. Like, going on a whole ass tangent about it, but pressure cooker, that's what it is. Slowly release it, allow yourself to feel. All right, well, I really appreciate this chat. I usually wrap these sessions up with four questions. Do you want to answer a couple more questions before we sign off? All right, sweet. Cool. They're very, very crazy questions. No, they're not. I'm just kidding. Okay, the first question. Who are your top three artists that are on repeat right now, musically?
I was going to look at my phone, but Beyonce, the new album that just came out.
Yay.
She's on repeat. There is a playlist on Apple called Pure Focus that is on repeat. And then I've been listening to a lot of Prince lately. I'm not sure why, but Prince has been like on repeat too.
Yeah, I find that he comes through at really pivotal moments for people. Yes. Like he just, and it's like the collective starts listening to him all at once usually. It's the wildest thing. He's got some sweet magic that will forever be with us.
Yes. Like his energy permeates even beyond, like it's insane. It's always, and my Apple player will play him even when I don't push anything, like, and I'll be thinking like whatever, and a song, like the perfect Prince song comes on. Like it's crazy. And there's no other artist that happens with on my, any of my plat, you know, things that I have music on.
Shout out to Prince. We see you. We feel you. All right. Next question. What do you want to be remembered for? Knowing the difference between crock pot and pressure cooker?
Yeah, maybe. The word that keeps coming up is people gatherer, bringing people together.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. What does your perfect Sunday look like?
I am such a nerd. I love to read like 3 books at a time. So like my perfect Sunday would be either in my comfortable bed. I have tons of blankies, like the soft blankies, or I have this little hammock that I like to chill in, and all day just be reading my books in the sun, in the woods, occasionally connecting with people that day, but mostly just to myself and my books. So like that's the perfect Sunday for me.
Yeah, that like reset space, that softness is what I felt as you were saying that. That's really beautiful. All right, and lastly, what is a gem that you would like to leave folks with who are tuned in to our episode today?
Oh gosh. It's so meaningful to keep creating community for ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's the power we create. Like there's so much power that comes from our community of people and staying intact and tuned with that. Even when we're introverts, community is so important. Even if it's just one other person in your community, that's okay. But community is such a valuable space for connection, for human connection, for healing, for fun, for laughter. Like this right here is a wonderful community that just got created. And so I think community above all else.
I definitely concur. Thank you so much for sharing that. And for those tuned in, thanks for tuning in to this episode. You can check out Allison via the links down in the description. And I hope to connect with y'all soon. Peace. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of The Podcast About People. I'm your host, Vita Miramontes Locke, and it was a pleasure to be here with y'all today. Thank you for tuning into this conversation. Chat more soon. Much love.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Kill C-Ray, host of Chris Sees the Internet. Catch my show along with B-Block TV, hosted by Gene Flo, The Parker Edison Project, hosted by Parker Edison, and The Heartful Truth, hosted by 7 Octobers and Melly Moreno. Turn on the alerts and subscribe so you know when every new episode drops. Audio wherever podcasts are found, and videos right here on Platform Collection YouTube.